This is That Twin Mama Podcast. But hey, you don't have to be a twin mom to be here. I'm not like a regular mom. I'm a cool mom. So whether you are new, soon to be, or seasoned parent, or maybe you just hope to have kids someday, I promise you'll find something to love, learn from, or laugh at in each episode. I'm your host, Lauren Birdie. Let's do it.
Welcome everyone to That Twin Mama Podcast. I'm so excited about this topic today. I feel like it's probably one of the most sought after desirable achievements for a new parent. And that's all things around sleep. I'm talking to your kids sleeping, you finally getting to sleep. I know as a mom, I've had two sets in a way. My son's now 13 and my twins are almost three. And I can't tell you how desperate I was to just get to that sleeping stage. And if you had come to me, I don't have millions of dollars. I never had millions of dollars. But if you were like, it will take all your life savings and I will guarantee you will be able to get your kids to sleep tomorrow, I would have given it to you. So all to say, this is such a hot topic and I feel like it'll be so informative for so many parents. So whether you are a new parent to a singleton or a parent to upcoming twins or twins that you already have in the toddler years, I have an expert today that knows all the things because she was actually a twin mom. So I want to introduce Lindsay Loring, who is a pediatric sleep expert and is the founder of Sleep Consultant with Tweet Dream Sleep Consulting. She is a mom to twin girls who just started kindergarten. That's exciting. And recently loves each year with her girls even more than the last. Lindsay's passion is helping families with multiples find routines and involve predictable sleep patterns. When she was a brand new mom to twins, the sleep deprivation hit her so hard, she knew there had to be a way to encourage better sleep for herself and her twins. Now that she knows it's possible to have twins who sleep well, she's actively coaching families all over the world to achieve the same thing. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi, thank you. So excited to be here.
I know. I'm so excited to have you today. So let's get into it. Tell me a little bit more about how you started your journey into being a pediatric sleep consultant, where your passion comes from that.
Yeah, so it was pretty organic. And by that, I mean, I just fell into it. But I'm kind of different in a way that I didn't know that sleep consulting was a thing.
Yes.
So when I was pregnant, I had the birth plan. I had the feeding plan. I had everything planned. I never researched sleep one time. Right. And then you get home and within 48 hours, you're crushed.
That's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. So I just sort of immersed myself into it because I was so, so sleep deprived. So sleep deprived. I didn't want to come home from Target one day. I share that story a lot. Like, I just wanted to pass up my house because I just felt like I was going home, but there was no sleep there. Right. And it was very, very overwhelming. So I just started to sort of get online, look into things and realize that there's, you know, there's forums out there for sleep, right? There's people actually talking about this. It's an actual thing, like wake windows, bedtime routines, et cetera. And so I sort of self-taught myself. And the things that I knew I implemented to my kids, right? And then I just started helping random people on the internet, like Facebook, whatever. And my husband's like, you really love this. And I said, yeah, like sleep literally makes the world go round, right? And so he suggested like, hey, you should look into like doing this as like an actual thing. So at that point, I went ahead and got certified in 2019 by the Family Sleep Institute. Was doing it part-time, it's like in my local community. And then COVID sort of turned things around for me in that I was laid off from my marketing job that I had for 10 years.
Yeah.
And we really took like a plunge as a family that this is something I really, really wanted to do. It was like my passion. And so I never did go back to work. But I've been working for myself now for, you know, over 4 years and it's been really life-changing. So
oh my God. That's so amazing. And that resonates with me so much in so many different ways. I think that's one of the first things you were saying about like driving from Target and not wanting to go home because sleep didn't live there and like not necessarily preparing for sleep while you're pregnant. Cause like nothing, like you don't, you're, of course you're working on having and birthing a healthy baby and you think about feeding and breastfeeding and your birth plan and all this stuff, but then I feel like as parents or you don't really think about, oh crap, I'm not going to sleep. Yes. That sounds like, okay, I went to college. I did all nighters, whatever. I'm not going to sleep. It's totally different. And like the sleep deprivation for like weeks and months on end, I don't think I just wasn't prepared for that. And I became desperate, you know, like once I had the kid, I was like, kids, two of them at the same time. I started just taking to the internet and Googling and doing all these different things. But I did find, which I'm so excited to have you on today, because I found a lot of resources for like sleep teaching, training, whatever you want to call it, for whatever age. But rare was it for twin specific, where like I would even talk to a consultant. I had a free consultation one time and then I asked him, okay, but what about twins? Like, oh yeah, then just do it with both. So we'll get into that in this episode, but there are like actual things that you can do as thinking of a twin mom, because just the management of two was overwhelming, and the management of two as you're sleep deprived, it's a lot. So I'm so glad to get in it. So let's just make sure we're speaking the same language, because as some of our listeners may not know what sleep training is or sleep teaching, or have never heard that word before. Like you said, I didn't know it was a thing until you know it's a thing. So tell me how do you define sleep training or teaching?
Yeah, I think it's just the process of teaching your child the skill of independent sleep. And by independent sleep, that looks like your baby being able to put themselves to sleep and connect their sleep cycles. It's really as basic as that. But the problem here is newborns have very, very little capacity to stay awake. They're just born sleeping, right? They're just so tired. Yeah. They eat, sleep, and poop around the clock. And so a lot of times these unsustainable practices come in place. And then it's no longer either sustainable for the baby or the parents. And so that's where sleep training comes in, because it's just creating a foundation of giving independent sleep to the child.
Right. Oh, I love that definition. And then like, I feel like most people, so are there different methods of sleep training? And maybe this will come in like a twofold question, because I feel like generally like or historically, a lot of times when people would think of sleep training or sleep teaching, they would think cry it out method, your kid's just crying it out the whole night. And I feel like on the internet, especially, there seems to be this, I don't know, maybe it's in my head, but there seems to be a divide of like, I sleep taught, I do not do that. You're letting your babies, there seems to be a lot of misconceptions and negative connotation around parents deciding to sleep train or teach when they decide to do it. Like, it just seems like the mom, like judges will come out of nowhere on both sides saying what they feel about this practice. What do you think the biggest misconception is on sleep training and teaching? And why do you think it has like this negative connotation sometimes with people?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And we know the internet is divided here. And I think that's popular with all sort of topics when it comes to child rearing. You know, if you ask a question, you're going to get it. These people on this side, these people on that side. And we just love to combat about it.
Yes, we do.
And, you know, honestly, I think it's very polarized for a couple of reasons, partly because there's many influencers out there who are going to just, for lack of a better word, fearmonger tired moms, and use these kind of buzzwords like attachment and things like that. And if your baby cries for 30 seconds, they're ruined. And I really felt very passionate about that. And you'd be surprised how many clients I talk to who cry and say, but this lady over here said that I'm ruining my child, and it's just not true. So during my certification, I really relied heavily on research. I think when we're doing anything with our children, we're looking into the research, right? We're making sure we're backed up by science. And so when we think about sleep training, there is no research that it's harmful. And then with that, we have to take these anecdotal advice and like, you know, stories that we hear. The lady down the street, oh, I sleep trained one night. Mm-hmm. It was easy peasy. And then this other lady goes to try it and it's 12 hours of torture. Yes. So it's not a one size fits all. And I think that these, you know, stories that get shared online, get dramatized and things like that. And then in addition, there's this tag word, cry it out, which if you ask me, that's not anything to do with sleep training. Sleep training is not just about crying, right? And if it was, nobody would do it. It's really about using your instincts to teach a skill, right? To achieve sleep, right? Yeah, it's hard out there.
I love how you just phrase that, because in my mind, as someone who like has a platform and has someone that's had, again, a child, 10 children, 10 years apart, like my first was sleeping through the night at like 8 weeks. And by sleeping through the night, I mean, I think he was sleeping more than 4 hours, maybe 5 hours, whatever you want to call it. Right. But that was like eight. I don't even remember what I did. Again, I was 23. I had energy of the gods. It was different. Right. And then I blacked out everything after. So then I had to restart with my twins. But anyways, I remember that happening with him. And the twins, yes, they were two, but they were also very different children. With even within the two of them, I saw differences in how they slept or what they needed. And so everyone's like, how did you get your kids to sleep, your twins to sleep? And I can give you my experience, but this is the reason why I want to have an expert on. This is why I'm having you on, because I can tell you my experience and it may not work for your kids at all. And then you think that you're doing something wrong, or I'm never going to like print out like, this is what I did and this is how to. I will always preface it with, this is my experience, right? And I do think that influencers or like creators have platforms now where they can reach hundreds of thousands of millions of people, and they have that holds power, and say, do this. This is how I feel. And your opinion becomes fact. And that's not the case. Always find an expert. Always find out. I love how you're saying backing by research and science. So I just really appreciate that overall, what you just described there, because I do think the internet is just so great and so dangerous in so many ways and a big hub of misinformation. So you got to find people that actually study, learn, know, and realize it's not one size fits all. So thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. And nobody has to sleep train if they don't want to.
Yes.
Right? You don't have
yes,
to.
Yes, exactly.
But if you want to, you find an expert or a resource to help you.
That's yeah, it. Exactly. That's 100% true. I love that you just said that. Okay, so let's just start from the beginning. We have newborns now. Newborn sleep. Can you sleep train a newborn? Can you teach them how to sleep that young?
Not traditionally.
Okay.
No. I mean, there's definitely things you can do to sort of lay a foundation.
Okay.
Definitely.
Tell me what that looks like.
Yeah. So usually around 6 to 8, you're going to have to just survive for about
yes,
6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, you do.
Right.
Yeah. Real talk.
Because really the babies are in a 24-hour cycle, meaning there's no night and day yet. They're eating around the clock. They're sleeping around the clock.
Yeah.
Around 6 to 8 weeks, we can expect day and night confusion to be corrected by having your babies in light, right, from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., right? And then having them in a dark room from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., really working on correcting the day and night confusion and sort of splitting their day in half. So we have 12 hours to the day, 12 hours at night.
See.
But you're not going to be able to achieve that on night one,
right? You're going to come to the hospital and be like, it's nighttime. It's daytime. I got my blackout curtains. Don't you see? I'm like, yeah.
No, I remember taking my newborn to the doctor. I was like, she slept 75 minutes in 24 hours. There's something wrong with her. And he's like, nope, she's just a newborn. So go back home, you know? And it's terrifying.
Right.
But there are things that you can do to set a foundation to where A, maybe you don't have to sleep train. And B, if you do, it's that much easier,
okay,
right? You can start a bedtime routine on day one,
mm-hmm,
right? Those steps you take as you gear your baby up for sleep.
Yeah.
They cue for sleep. They understand that part, right? You use a swaddle. You're using a pacifier, using white noise, things like that. You're making sure they're well fed during the day, right? Really. And, you know, sleep training and feeding are something we might get into as well. But newborns are feeding on demand. Their needs are on demand. So we're really taking that into consideration as well. You know, there are steps you can take, like the 5 S's of soothing to help your baby soothe.
Yeah. What is the 5 S's? I've read about that. What is that? it's like swaddle, sleep.
So like,
I'm thinking of stuff.
So swing, so like the swing motion, suck, like pacifier or breast. Oh my gosh, girl.
No, you're fine. We don't
shush. So like a shushing noise.
Some other ones too. Yeah. Look them up. There's something like that. And if we even want to go there, but yeah. So it's like swish. Yeah. Swing, swaddle, all that stuff. Okay. Continue that.
Oh, swaddle. Okay. So we have four.
Oh, okay. We have four. There's one more out there. Swing, swaddle, swish, soothe, something, suck.
Yep. Yep. We got it. So basically you're working on that with your baby to have them start to what I call trigger their calming reflex, because a newborn goes from zero to purple crying in a blink of an eye, right?
Mm.
So there's not a lot of ability for them to self-soothe. So when we're using these other tactics, like the 5 S's, we can really early on teach baby how to identify that calming reflex, right?
Yeah.
And then working on drowsy but awake, right? We know that's a thing.
Right.
That can definitely work for newborns where they're not going down wide awake, but they're not going down fully asleep either.
Oh.
So they're able to get themselves from that drowsy state. And that's kind of step one.
That's step one. Yeah. And I will say, like, that was something I kind of, I think, hyper fixated on with, like, my newborns would just, I would feed them and pass out. And I was like, wait, no, today we're like, this is a wake window. And like, sometimes it just doesn't happen. Like, and especially in those first six, 8 weeks, like, they are your boss. It is what it is. Go to your baby's cues. There are things that you can do to encourage, like, great systems, like a bedtime routine, all these different things. But if your baby, for instance, is sleeping after nursing and there's no waking them up. There's no waking them up. Like, I remember being like hyper fixated on that. And then, eventually they did start going down drowsy, but it might not happen right away for you, or it might not happen that 6 to 8 weeks. And that, like, you know, like Lindsay was just saying, it's, you know, play it by ear. And those first few weeks is kind of, there's things you can do, but also there's very little control that they have over their body and their systems and their abilities to do things for themselves yet. So give yourself some grace and give baby some grace as well. I love that. I was wondering, you had said something about they had slept, one of your children slept 75 minutes and 24 hours. And you're like, what is it? I don't know. I never took a clock, but that's probably around what's like how much my kids were sleeping. But I think that also caused me alarm. I was like, are they sleeping too little? And the doctor was like, no, this is a newborn. Are there things though, that someone should go to the doctor? You should go to the doctor if you're alarmed at all, like do that. You have a doctor for that reason. But are there things from your experience that, yeah, you might definitely want to go double check that are abnormal for newborns and sleep, or things to look out for that maybe should cause alarm or not really?
Not really. I mean, yeah. 100%. You know, just always practice safe sleep, which looks like the ABCs of sleep. So alone, right, back and crib, right? That's going to be your best chance to reduce.
Wait, I love that.
The risk.
Right? Alone, back and crib. Would say that again. What is that? I'm just for people. Yeah. I know.
So it's called the ABCs of sleep. It's very easy to remember.
Yeah.
Alone, back, crib, you know, meaning your baby's not bed sharing. With a parent or sibling, they don't have any like loose bedding, clothing in the crib with them. And then they're placed on their back for sleep, in a crib or bassinet.
Yeah.
Or play can work as well. But no, you know, your pediatrician's following you along as a newborn,
yeah,
with your weight gain and things like that. You know, as babies get older, we might look for mouth breathing or snoring or something like that. But, no, my best advice for newborns is just the safe sleep.
Yeah, safe sleep. Okay. I didn't even know about that ABC, alone, back and crib. See, I learn things new every day. Okay. So now, like, we've talked about some of the behaviors and some of the things that you can do for a newborn to encourage eventually, like, easier maybe transition to sleep teacher and training and things like that. Now, let's say we're actually ready to start sleep training. Like, when are babies ready to start doing that? And what does that look like for someone starting out?
So I have a lot of families coming to me with very little babies, meaning they're 3.5 to 4 months old. And the reason why that is because I find that twin parents, they've met their threshold.
Yes. Right?
At 3.5 to 4 months, and or mom's going back to work. Right.
Yes.
So it all lines up. Whereas I'm not saying having one singleton is easy or hard.
Yeah.
It's just different. Right. Parents can confidently take shifts and things like that. So when I have somebody coming to me at that age, I'm sort of going to question them or evaluate them on a couple things,
mm-hmm,
really how motivated parents are. If parents want to sleep train, we can make it, you know, we can make it happen for sure. Right. Mom's back at work. Dad's back at work.
Yeah.
Nobody's sleeping with twins or up every 1 to 2 hours. So then I'll also ask some questions based off of age. And then typically when I'm speaking with twin parents, we have to take adjusted age into consideration.
Right, right.
Right, which is a very, very gray area. I have full-term twins who can't stay awake 90 minutes. And then
right.
I have, you know, others that are born 6 weeks early and they're just powering through their wake windows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very important that I kind of interview these parents to see if they're ready. And I ask, you know, what are some signs that baby can self-soothe? Can they put their fingers in their mouth? Can they change body position, you know, by kind of flinging legs around? Can they rub their hair? Can they tug on their ears? Another thing I'll ask is, what are the wake windows? How long can your baby stay awake? And if they're like, oh, they go back to sleep after 60 minutes, then it's just not time.
Really? Right? That's a sign.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. So I'm looking for a baby that can stay awake about an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours. And that really lines up with about a 4 to 5 month old, right? Is the earliest I'm going to suggest to work with me would be about 4 months old.
So that's so helpful to know. It's not necessarily around like a specific, they've turned now 3 months and whatever, 29 days, they're ready. It's more about how long they're able to stay awake. Also, it sounds like one of the first things you said is mom and dad ready to dedicate like to it or like, are they committed? Where it seems like if there's not an environment where people are going to really commit to whatever it is that you teach, there's no point, which I love, because like you have to go on, like say more of that.
Yeah. I mean, a parent has to be ready to make change, to be able to make change, to want to follow a schedule, to want to follow a routine, to be accountable, right?
Yes.
So what I teach isn't easy. Right. Yeah. And so you really have to want them to be invested in it to take advantage of the services and the coaching. So I'm never here to convince anybody to sleep train. I tell people that all the time. I am not here to convince you to do anything you don't want to do. But if you want to, girl,
yes,
I'm here.
I got
right. You. And I have something that works for you. You know, what else is I going to say? So it's not necessarily, so a lot of times people will say, well, shouldn't we wait till 6 months or 7 months when we're night weaning? And I think something that's really important with my services in particular is we don't night wean a lot of the time. So if we have a 4 month old coming to us, they still need to eat overnight.
Yeah.
So we're still teaching independent sleep, but we're having a night feeding, which a lot of parents appreciate. I think that's a common misnomer as well with sleep training, is that means that you're not feeding your baby. It's not true.
Right. Yeah. I blacked out. I literally blacked out the whole experience, but I don't remember like dropping those night feedings. Like we didn't. And I know there's other things, like there's like these dream feeds, or actually let's talk about dream feeds. We had questions on that, but what are your thoughts on that? Yeah, we did. First of all, let's define what a dream feed is. And then I would like to know your thoughts on it.
So another way to describe a dream feed is a parent-led feed. And that means
the
parents are feeding out of convenience, which is fine, right? Because what, a baby goes down for sleep around 7 or 8, and then a parent goes down to sleep around, let's say 10, 10:30, 11. So the baby's already been sleeping for 3 hours and they're thinking, well, they're going to be up in 2 hours. I've only slept 2 hours. So they want to kind of like top them off with that dream feed, so that they know, okay, from 10, for example, we'll get an additional 5 hours,
right?
Or whatever it is. So that's really what a dream feed is. Maybe you don't even take the baby out of the crib. You're just plugging them with a bottle or the breast. They're very, very much asleep while they're feeding. They take, 3, 4, 5 ounces.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it never happened.
Yeah.
Versus a true feeding where a baby will wake up and signal that they want to eat. Right.
Right.
So I don't know if you care, but I'm not really a fan of dream feeds.
No, I was curious. I did dream feeds. I don't know if they worked. Let me just say that I would do them.
Yeah.
They'd still be up whenever they wanted to be up. I was like, well, I heard somewhere I'm supposed to do these dream feeds. Again, this is my twin mama's desperation with no consultant. But yeah, that's why I honestly was wondering. So you're not a big fan?
What we know about sleep is the time that you fall asleep, whether that's 7 p.m. or 10 p.m., we have a good 5 to 6 hours of very deep restorative sleep.
Right.
That's when we get that best brain food.
Right. Okay? That REM, right? Whereas, it's called REM, right? I took science class somewhere. REM sleep.
It's actually more non-REM.
Bam. Okay, never mind. Just kidding. Just kidding.
It's all good. But as we gear up to wake up in the morning, we go through tons of REM, right? We dream, we toss and turn, we check the alarm a couple of times, right? Like we're gearing up. Back when we were sleeping through the night, I know if you're listening to this and you're not sleeping through the night, you're like, I crash, I don't wake up. But when you're typically sleeping, that's how it works. You sort of become more restless as the night goes on. So I'm in the camp, like, why are we disrupting this amazing sleep for these babies with the dream feed? I'm teaching that we actually split the night in half. So if your baby's going down at 6, they're eating at 12. If they're going down at 7, they're eating at 1. And I really find it's very achievable to sort of schedule it in. You know, the digestive system, and just like the baby would wake up if the dream feed went away, they'll wake up at 10.
Yeah, mine did.
I'm like, hello.
Yeah, literally, that mine did. I don't even know if they really ate. Like, I don't even know what happened. Like, I'm like, what just happened? Do you know? And so, yeah, I agree. But yeah.
Yeah. So I do find that we can get with keeping a feed, which is really important with those 4 and 5 month olds, we can get these 5 and 6 hours of sleep on either side, which is so restorative.
Yeah.
I mean, in the beginning, I was sleeping 8 hours, but it was in 2 hour chunks. I felt like goblin. I mean, I just felt terrible because there's something to be said about that consolidation. So yeah.
Yeah.
No dream feed. Over
here. That doesn't. And like, you know, and if you do decide to dream feed, you know, it's up to you. I was someone that did do it. I just noticed while doing it, I couldn't remember. It wasn't like, oh, because of, I don't remember the dream feeds making my life easier. I just remember it's something I tried and my life kind of stayed the same. That was just for my babies. Right. And so I like how you've been making the comparison, like, of how sleep happens and you're in that deep sleep. And then, like, I mean, babies are humans. So if someone's waking me up out of some deep sleep and putting, like, just because you think I'm going to be hungry, like, that's going to, just like you were saying, I get 8 hours of sleep, but in 2 hour chunks, like, it's waking them up. It's probably, now that I think back, just like, you know, it's going to be hard or it might not serve whatever purpose you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. And I say, if somebody woke me up at 10 o'clock and asked me if I want some pizza, I would definitely eat it.
Yeah, that's true. I would definitely eat it. I would definitely probably be hungry for a second too. But I definitely, you know, might not sleep for longer, but I would eat it. Yeah, that's such a funny comparison. Okay, so as someone's thinking about sleep training, and again, y'all, I will link this in the description, but you can look at a lot of different free guides that at Tweet Dreams has on her IG page, along with consultations, which I highly recommend. But I'm sure, like, it depends on each parents, kid, all these different things. But like, do you generally have a standard practice that you look to do when you are thinking about sleep training? Like, after you realize they're ready, parents are committed, then what? Like, what is your standard kind of advice with that?
Like, if they're in plan with me?
Or yeah. Like, yeah, if they're in plan with you, or like, cause like I, for instance, I'll just give my experience. I did something. It's kind of like, I guess it's called the Ferber method. Again, there's all these methods you can find out online. And I'm not even sure if I'm speaking correctly. So Lindsay, please like tell me if I'm wrong, but it was like kind of, I think I would let them cry for 5 minutes, then go in. And then I would wait the next time it would be 10 minutes and then go in, something like that, where they were crying, but I would come in and be consistent with like my, okay, everything's okay. I wouldn't pick them up, but it was like, you're safe. I love you, out. And like, I would leave them awake. And then I would do that repetitively over a few times up until like, I think a 45 minute, they never made it to whatever the longest window was. And I just did that for, I don't know, me and my husband for like a week or something. And it seemed to be what worked for us. Yeah. So I didn't know if that's something you've heard of, obviously heard of, or something you recommend, or yeah, your thoughts.
So as a sleep consultant, I have not created anything new. Just
right. Okay. Yeah.
There's really going to be about 4 methods when we think about sleep training, and 2 of them I don't use.
Okay.
So I'm really using just 2. So pick up, put down could be one that would be very appropriate for a very young child, right? 2, 3, 4 months old.
Yeah.
And then we kind of move to quote unquote Ferber. So he's, you know, written a book about this particular method, which includes the parent stepping away for a period of time.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
They're still actively involved, but they're stepping away to give space. And then we have something called stay in the room. It's been coined a couple different ways as well, but it basically means parents are not leaving the room as baby's falling asleep.
Huh. Right? Oh,
okay.
I don't, I wouldn't be a fan of that one. Just me personally. I would be like, I need to get out, in my head. Maybe not. I can't remember.
Sure. Yeah. And then the last one would be extinction, which would be called cried out, right? Where parents are not involved. They're not going back in the room at all, which doesn't feel intuitive for any parent.
Right.
And the problem with that is when you go to the pediatrician, you're exhausted and you're like, how do I get this baby to sleep? He or she is likely going to say, just let him cry it out.
Yes.
And that to a mom is very, very triggering.
Yes.
Right. So what does that mean? What does that look like? How, you know, we want to be involved as the mom. We always want to have the solution, right? It's how we're like wired.
Yes.
We are the primary caregiver. And so cried out extinction feels like an alien type of something really scary.
Yeah.
But when I'm teaching families, I'm gathering information from them to understand who they are, where they came from, what they've tried, what type of birth experience they had, what type of postpartum experience they've had, what's feeling triggering for them right now. So I'm asking these questions so I can say, you know what? I think this method's going to work really well for you, or this method's going to work really well for you. It's going to be one of those two. We're going to leave in check, or we're going to stay in the room.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of times we see this word gentle,
right?
And I believe that we are all gentle parents.
Yes. Right? I love that, Lindsay. Yes.
Even if we teach independent sleep, we are still a gentle mama. So that really kind of hurts my heart when I see that. And people will ask me, hey, are you a gentle sleep coach? And I'm like,
yeah,
sure. Right.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a gentle person. So are you. We're just teaching a skill over here. So it's kind of an understanding that a lot of moms will want to pick the stay in the room method because it feels more gentle.
Yeah.
But like you said, how does that work?
How does it
work?
Yeah. Like, so you stay in the room and you don't pick them up?
So all of my methods would include a pickup.
Okay.
If we want to or need to, but it's more so there aren't any breaks in the soothing from the parent.
Oh, yeah.
Which can work and it cannot work. And specifically with twins, it doesn't necessarily work as well because we already have all these variables.
All right, y'all, that was part one of my conversation with Lindsay of Tweet Dreams on all things baby sleep. Join us next week where we really get into some good stuff, y'all, where we talk more about like a twin specific lens, because sleep training or sleep teaching with one child is one thing, but doing two at the same time creates a whole new list of variables that you want to look out for. We also talk about toddler sleep teaching and training and all the regressions that happen. Y'all, I didn't even know about the 4-month regression until, if you know, you know. But we talk about some tips and tricks of how to deal with that. And then also some of our favorite products. There are so many products out there that range from like thousands of dollars that you can buy for sleep. We really go through each of some of the really popular ones and say if it's worth it, if it's not. So a lot of great things we'll be discussing next week. So definitely tune in. But thank you for listening this week, y'all. I'll see you next time.
Peace.